Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Make knowledge of the scriptures your love, said St. Jerome back in the 5th century. Live with them, meditate on them, make them the sole object of your knowledge and inquiries. Or you could say our next guest has taken the scriptures to heart for decades, writing books like Celebration of Discipline, Prayer, Finding the Heart's True Home, Simplicity, Streams of Living Water, and a number of others that explore what a spiritual life based on the Bible's revelation is all about. His name is Richard Foster. His latest book is called Life with God, Reading the Bible for Spiritual Transformation, and he is with us now. Richard, welcome to Open House. Good to have you.
Sheridan, it's a delight to be with you. Thank you for having me. Mm. And I must apologize for my accent, but I hope you can understand what I'm saying. Oh,
you don't need to apologize at all. We have many of your folk on the show. You know, I was just saying to my wife the other day that what I've appreciated about your work over the last couple of decades and the books that you've written is that you haven't kind of churned out a book every 6 months. You haven't, you know, just thrown out book after book after book. You've got a number of books to your name, but they've all been significant books that have actually, in the end, had, you know, really, really quite an impact. Has there been a philosophy of writing behind your work, a strategy behind you?
But part of it is very practical. I write in the very old-fashioned way. You know, I spend all morning taking out a comma and then all afternoon putting it back in. So it does take a long time for me to get too far. But really, it's a very important to live for a while and write out of the living that you've done. Mm. And I just need to take time to think and to experience life with people and life with God. And then allow, when I really have something that needs to be said, that's the time to write.
Mm. Well, those books and the many others that you've written, I was, you know, talking about the Celebration of Discipline and Prayer and Streams of Living Water, etc. They've made you one of the better-known Christian authors of our day. Tell me about your journey to faith, though. How did you become a Christian in the first place?
Well, I became a Christian as a teenager. I was very shy. There was a Christian, a group of Christians on the high school campus that I was drawn toward, maybe 20 of them or so, just because I didn't know what it was. I've come to call it deep joy. But I hung around them, debated with them. There was one fellow who was very bright, and he was happy to enter into all kinds of discussions. And for about 7 months, we just had lots of conversations. And our conversations would often end up with a discussion of Jesus and the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. And I really worked with that for a long time, but finally felt that this was a reality and felt if that's true, if Jesus is alive and among his people today, then I need to do something about it.
Yeah,
so, and that's what brought me to faith.
Wow, so it really was the resurrection, I guess the historical facts around it that actually helped you.
Exactly. There were many, many of those things. And then, of course, watching these young people, you know. I mean, they had the normal problems that teenagers do, but there was something very deep and very real about them. And that drew me in.
Hmm. Tell me about your early spiritual mentors during that time, both contemporary people and then also the authors that you started to read during that time.
Well, right. There was a youth pastor that was wonderful for me when I first came into faith because instead of just fun and games, he took us through a serious study of the book of Romans in the New Testament. For 2 years, I soaked in the book of Romans. That was a great study for me. And then, too, I began reading Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Cost of Discipleship, just as a teenager, way back then. And that book, I still have the old dog-eared taped together volume, but it was really a lifesaver to me because he took this life with Christ seriously. And of course, his own story personally was very compelling, but the writing itself, which is really an expanded commentary on the Sermon on the Mount, and is one of the great pieces of writing, that was very, very helpful, and that in time led me to many of the much older writers like St. Augustine and so forth.
You and Dallas Willard are fellow journeymen in this kind of writing and teaching.
Yes, I went to pastor a little church. I mean, it's a church that would have ranked as a marginal failure on the ecclesiastical scoreboards. But there, Dallas and his wife, Jane, and their two kids were at that in that congregation. It was a very wonderful experience. I mean, this is 30-plus years ago. Mm. I often would tease that when I taught, folks might come, but when Dallas taught, they brought their tape recorders, and me too.
Wow.
And Dallas, of course, is a professor of philosophy, and yet when I watched him in that little church, and the closest friend was a construction worker with a third-grade education, and they would meet every week, just the two of them, for a Bible study at Dallas's home, and this fellow, Tony DiRenzo, loved Dallas. It was an amazing thing to watch the two of them. He couldn't have understood Dallas's philosophical work in the least, but this love together for Jesus and the caring for Scripture, you know, it really was quite moving.
Mm.
But that was 1970, so
wow.
It was a while back.
Absolutely. This is Open House right across Australia. Richard Foster is our guest. He's, of course, the guy behind Celebration of Discipline and Prayer and Simplicity and all of those very influential books. And the new one, Life with God, Reading the Bible for Spiritual Transformation. We're going to get talking about that very soon. Theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast. Looking back then, Richard, what would have been the most significant experiences shaping your life and work then?
Well, I first want to talk a little about suffering. The first Bible verse that I ever memorized, I mean, it wasn't John 3:16. It was 1 Peter 1:7, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perishes, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ.
Hmm.
Now, the reason I memorized that verse as a very young Christian, my mother was dying at the time, and one of my first prayers was for her healing. It wasn't to be. She died, and a couple of years later, my father died. And actually, learning that little church community, that group of teenagers that were part of a Quaker church, a friend's church, they gathered around me and my brothers, and really became family to us. It was very important.
Mm. You were close to your mom and dad, obviously?
Yep, and my mom maybe more so. There was a tenderness in her. She had multiple sclerosis back in those days. We didn't quite know what all of that was, but I would watch her get up at 5 a.m. and try to clean a little bit and then sit down exhausted and then get up again. I mean, she was a real trooper and taught me a great deal. And I was the last one to see her before she died.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about suffering, and I wonder whether in our Western societies, the US and Australia indeed as well, we spend so much time, so much money actually on medicating suffering, you know, trying to,
yeah,
I guess, eradicate it. And that's a good thing, I'm sure. I just wonder whether we do miss some of the wonderful lessons through it, though. Just as you said,
exactly.
I mean, that would have shaped you in a way that other things could not have actually shaped you.
That's exactly right. And I think that actually for the church, one of the things we must learn is how to suffer together. You know, we are glad for all of the wonderful medications and ways to relieve suffering, but there are times to go through difficult times together.
While we're talking about your early forming and shaping experiences, there's an interesting story behind your calling to be a writer as well, isn't there, or your writing career?
Well, I had for many years wanted to write, but I never said a word to anybody. And then I had a little experience where I actually, for 3 days, had been fasting and praying, and I felt a concern to invite someone who actually lives some distance away to come and pray for me. And he came. It's so fun because the first thing he did was he sat down and began to share his sin to me, and I listened to that. What is he doing? And And then he looked right at me and he said, "Now, do you still want me to pray for you?" And he saw right into my heart, because I had him up on this pedestal, you know, and he was bringing all of that down. And then, and I said, "Yes, I do." And that, in that way, it was safe for him to pray for me. Well, it was a wonderful prayer that he gave me, and there were many aspects of it that were very important, but I remember him saying, "I pray for the hands of a writer." And it astonished me. It was the beginning where I began to write. And years later, when Celebration of Discipline came out, I took it to him and said I felt that his prayer was a prophetic prayer for me.
Wow, what a beautiful story. Beautiful story. Richard Foster, the writer, is with us on Open House, theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast. Now, while we're talking about spiritual disciplines, you've actually been credited as the one who has helped the Protestant and evangelical wings of the Christian faith kind of rediscover, relearn the spiritual disciplines, whether it be, you know, you were just talking about your experience there of being, you know, on a retreat and praying, and there's fasting, there's solitude, there's silence, there's a whole heap of spiritual disciplines. When did you first get serious about the spiritual disciplines personally?
Well, it had to have been right after I had taken a step of faith. I felt actually, virtually the next morning, that I needed to do something about these things. And so I started getting up an hour earlier to do a little exercise, a little stretching, but to open the Bible, read the Bible. This is just as a young teenager, to come to Scripture and to be taught by it. And so I began doing that way back then. And, of course, that led to many other things. And then when I began to read the devotional masters, I mean, they're full of these kinds of things. And I did that because I felt that spirituality in our day was pretty weak, and the nutrients were not very strong. And so we had to go back a few centuries in order to read people who had took this life seriously. And a member of the early Christians called themselves the Athletes of God, and the idea of training in the spiritual life became clear to me as I read them.
Yes. So we've got to touch on that, because there are some who fear that, I mean, often they don't think about it with prayer and Bible study, but some of the other spiritual disciplines, like it might be confession, or it might be a solitude or silence or community or whatever other kind of activities, spiritual activities we can take on in the phrase spiritual disciplines. Some have feared that they're kind of, you know, work salvation, and by that I mean trying to work out our way to heaven instead of accepting it as a free gift of God through Jesus. What do you say to people in response to that?
Well, it's very important to see that the opposite of grace is works, because works has to do with earning, and there's not a thing we can do to earn the goodness of God. So the opposite of grace is works, but not effort. Even Jesus spoke about striving to enter in at the straight gate. And you remember the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, he said, to exercise yourself unto godliness. That word exercise, exercizo, the background to that is the Greek gymnasium, where the Greek athletes would train. So it's important for us to see how grace works in a life. God invites us into a participatory relationship. Many people today are not only saved by grace, they get paralyzed by it. They can't see how to go forward and how to move on. Mm. And so that's why the disciplines are important.
Yes.
And they don't earn us anything. There's no virtue in them, whatever. All they do is place us before God, where God then begins to work in our lives.
Yeah. Richard, do you see, at this current moment in history for the Western world, do you see any one particular spiritual discipline that we most need to relearn, rediscover, recover?
Yes, solitude. Solitude is one of the deepest disciplines of the spiritual life, because we have this tendency to feel that we are the CEO of the universe. And it's solitude that takes care of that, because some of the very first experiences, we go through this fear of, you know, what will happen to people at my work or in my family. Well, of course, the deepest fear is that they'll get along quite well without us. And then we begin to realize that we're not everything. There's an old story, one of Aesop's fables, about the flea on the chariot wheel looking back and saying, "My, what a dust storm I've caused." Well, see, we need to kind of deal with those things, and then we begin to, through experiences of solitude, we begin to relate to other people in a way that's helpful to them when we're with them.
Yes.
See, if we're constantly filled with noise and hurry and crowds of climb and push and shove, then we cannot actually even be present to people because we're so full of ourselves, we're so full of our agendas, and solitude is what helps us to deal with that.
Mm, let alone hearing from God to find out the antidote to those things. It's interesting.
Yep.
That 30-odd years ago in the first edition of Celebration of Discipline, the same line still remains in all the editions that you've released since. The first line is, "Superficiality is the curse of our day."
Yes,
and
right.
It probably really still is now. Even 30 years later, it probably still is the curse of our day.
That's certainly as true today as it was back then.
Yeah.
Often, even especially among Christians, you know, they're constantly running after the flavor of the month.
Mm.
Even one of the old writers, Blaise Pascal, said that we could solve the world's problems if we could learn to sit in our room
alone.
And be quiet. Yeah.
Yes, very, very true. This is Open House right across Australia, and we're talking to Richard Foster, author of books like Celebration of Discipline, Prayer, Finding the Heart's True Home, Simplicity, Streams of Living Water. And the new one is Life with God, Reading the Bible for Spiritual Transformation. Let's move to that, because you've written on all so many other spiritual disciplines, prayer, simplicity, etc. Now it's time to look at the one of which is the very basis of so many of the other spiritual disciplines. If you're going to have some time alone, it really is to have some time alone with God, and the Bible is God's primary source of revelation about who he is. Tell me one thing that you wish folks would actually understand about the Bible.
Well, I think it's very important to see that God is, through the Bible, over and over and over saying, "I am with you. I am with you." See, God was with Abraham. God was with Noah. God was with Moses, and on and on and on. "I am with you. I am with you." But then the deepest question that comes is, "Will you be with me?" And it's that penetrating question, are we prepared for a with God life? For example, just learning to live without guile. You know, live a day without guile. See, when we're with God, we don't need to control and manage other people. We don't need to try to get our own way so much. But that's a life with God, and it frees us from so many things. But we have to be prepared to live without those things. Someone asked a little boy what a lie was, and his answer was, "Well, it's an abomination to God and a very present help in time of trouble." You know. And when we're with God, those kinds of things, lying, for example, we let go of. And we have to be prepared for that.
You know, in my mind, there are really two tragedies when it comes to the whole idea of the Bible in the life of the person who wants to read it, whether it be the Christian or whether it be the seeker who's just wanting to know what the Bible actually says about God and life and all matters spiritual. The first problem is having a head full of Bible knowledge but a heart full of pride, almost
yep,
like you said there.
Exactly.
You know, a mind full of data but no change in character. The second one's equally tragic and equally probably spiritually dangerous, and that's having what the Bible calls zeal without knowledge, kind of a flimsy approach to the faith that relies just solely on emotional experiences alone. How do you think we avoid either problem?
Yeah. The first thing is that we come to the Bible to be formed in our spirit, in our soul, the character transformation. That's what it's all about. We keep that in mind. We're not trying to amass information. We're not trying to, gather our arguments to prove that everybody else is wrong. We're coming to be formed, spiritually formed. And then the second thing is we come. We actually hold ourselves before the Bible over periods of time. And with larger portions of the Bible, not just a little verse to kind of get me through the day. That's not wrong, but we need larger the context of Scripture.
Mm.
I was just thinking before we begin talking about the 23rd Psalm and just living with that Psalm. Memorize it and live with it and let it form you. The Sermon on the Mount, the greatest statement for life ever given. Just soak in that over periods of time. Take a experience of solitude for 2 or 3 days and just lean in to the Sermon on the Mount, or to like the book of Galatians. That's a little book in the New Testament and one of the great books about freedom in a life with God, and really soak into the words of that, or Colossians. There are just so many of these wonderful passages, and you begin to get a feel for this life with God.
Yeah, it's really exciting, isn't it, when you actually think that God's goal for us is actually to make him more like himself, more like the character of Jesus, who was God incarnate. That's the goal he has for us, and he uses the Bible to actually do that. Now, in the book Life with God, you actually talk about kind of two approaches to reading Scripture. You talk about reading with understanding and then reading with the heart. Now, give us some principles and some guidelines for both. Start off with reading with understanding. What are some principles that we can keep in mind to read the Bible with understanding?
Yeah, the first thing is to really understand the context of the Bible, the context, the history, the grammar, the whole contextual consideration of what that world was about and what the author was trying to say. So I get that. I use the best tools of study that are available to me, scholars who have written on these things. I can work with those. And I'm learning in large enough parts of Scripture that I'm not piecemealing it out to get little things that make me feel good. I'm getting a sense of the whole. I remember the first time I ever experienced times of solitude, and I took the book of Jeremiah in the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, and would read through the entire book and just try to understand this prophet, this Old Testament prophet, and the context for him.
It saves us from manipulating the Bible, doesn't it? Because it's very easy for us to manipulate it.
We're trying to allow the Bible to form us. We're not trying to control what comes out of the Bible.
Yes.
And honestly, God has presented the Scripture to us in such a way that ordinary people with honest hearts, they can understand the Scripture in its general outline and thrust. Even our oldest son, when he was 10 years old, he read through the book of Revelation, and I was actually teaching a course on Revelation at the time, and so I went to him and I said, "Joel, did you understand this? You know?" Well, yes, he did. He understood who wins in the end. You know,
wow.
He got the message of it. Now he didn't understand every little detail, but he could know what it's about.
Yeah. Okay. Now some guidelines on reading with the heart.
Yeah. The first thing is to prepare the heart to hear from God. Hearing is an art that tends to be lost in our day, and that means first just slowing down a little bit and then coming to the Scripture with a humble heart, if you will. We want to be formed by it. We want to submit to it. We want to be taught by it. So we're listening with the heart. And now that we don't leave the mind behind, we descend with the mind into the heart, and there we stand before the Lord as he teaches us. I've been taking a little practice more recently where I would take a passage in one of the Psalms, and first I would just read it through just to get the context and the message, and then I would read it through a second time, and I'd use a Bible that I'm comfortable marking up. I would take a highlighter and just highlight any passage that, you know, begins to speak to me or I felt as was important.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the second reading. And then I would do a third reading only the highlighted sections. see if there might be a phrase or even a word that would kind of, I don't know, rise to the surface in my mind, in my heart, and I would take that, maybe the phrase, "Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised." And then I would just memorize that. I mean, usually it would be a very brief phrase or sentence, and live with that the whole day. Let that be with me the whole day. Hmm. Or another psalm, I remember one of them was, "I will set the Lord always before me." And just take that. "I will set the Lord always before me." And allow that to form my heart. I'm reading with the heart.
Mm-hmm. Allowing
reading to be changed by it.
So much of what you're saying, the key thing for me is, one is time. It's unhurried time with God that we're talking about here.
Actually
allowing these things to soak in, to penetrate, to allow God to actually impress them into our hearts, not just simply to tickle our minds.
Exactly. A friend of mine, Eugene Peterson, has an image that he uses about that, you know, you can't do spiritual formation work in a stampede, thinking of cattle in a stampede. You have to rope a couple of steers, calm them down.
That's good.
Let the adrenaline run out.
Yeah.
And then maybe we can do some work together. And to come to Scripture, see, one of the things, it's the racing of our mind and heart. We need to let that calm down. And so that we can listen.
Richard, fascinating to talk to you. I've got to ask you this before we let you go. You've been very generous with your time. Somebody of your profile with the books that you've written, it would be very interesting to say, well, he's got it all together. I want to know, do you ever experience spiritual dryness? Have you ever had times where you don't
indeed.
Want to pray, you don't, you know, God seems distant from you, etc.?
Absolutely, absolutely. People must understand that none of us live on a sort of spiritual high of some kind. No, no. We have plenty of dry times, and we must be prepared for barren day after barren day after barren day, because we're after God, not some kind of religious experience.
Mm.
We're after God. And I have them just like anybody else.
Right.
I remember when I wrote the prayer book,
yes.
When I finished that, and I actually wrote the last sentence on New Year's Eve, and when I finished, I didn't want to pray.
Yeah, you're over it.
I didn't even like prayer. No, it was kind of burnout, but
yes.
I had a little group of, there were five of us, we met together every week, and one of the questions we always asked each other in the group was, what experiences of prayer and meditation have you had this past week? Well, I had to let them know, I don't even like praying. And, you know, their response was all grace and mercy. They said, "We don't think you should pray, and we will become your prayer for you."
Mm.
Wasn't that nice?
Isn't that lovely? Supporting you.
And they encouraged me to, you know, rest a little and take walks, and I did that at the end of the day, quit a little early and walked around some lakes nearby, and it wasn't long, and I was ready to pray again.
Yes, yes. And after all of these years of then walking with God through the dry times, through the wonderful mm-hmm. flourishing times, what characteristic of God most amazes you now, these days, Richard?
Yeah, the absolute goodness of God. It's just quite amazing. You think in that tiny epistle of 1 John, in the back of the Bible, John says, we're sharing with you what we have seen and heard, what we've handled with our own hands, and then he says this. I mean, just try to think, if you were to sum up all that you knew about God in one phrase, this was his: God is light, and in him is no darkness
at all. Yes.
Boy, I thought, that is so true.
Mm.
That is so true, because, you know, we live in a world that tries to convince us that God is not good. But I tell you, you live with God over a period of time, and you see the absolute goodness of God. God is out to do us good all the time.
Richard, I've so enjoyed this last few moments with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Sheridan. It's been wonderful to talk with you.
That's Richard Foster, founder of the Renovare movement. Renovare.org is the website there. Author of many very influential books, like The Celebration of Discipline, Simplicity, Prayer, Finding the Heart's True Home, Streams of Living Water. The new one is called Life with God, Reading the Bible for Spiritual Transformation.
We hope you enjoy this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.